Hey, welcome to Okay. All right, let's try again. Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And we're back for season three, which means we're starting year three of this podcast.
I know, it's so cool. I am thinking back to when it was early 2017 and I had this job in San Francisco, and what I would do on the way back was listen to this podcast. It was my favorite thing. The one episode I remember is, remember when Maddow had that one piece of the tax returns?
Yes.
All I could wait for was the episode that you guys are going to release on that and watching your guys' tweets on it, you and Sarah's tweets. Oh my God, that's all I was doing.
I live tweeted that shit while drinking a beer, and it was actually great. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's been so long.
Oh God, it has really been so long. So we're back, our first episode of 2019, which I'm sure is going to bring its own unique dumpster fires, but I'm happy to put the dumpster fires of 2018 in the past, which we don't ever just get rid of things, but I'm looking forward to the fresh hell that awaits us. You know, we're back. We didn't do many episodes in December. December was a really hard month for me, just on a personal level. So it was the 1 year anniversary of my mom's death, and then the holidays are just sort of a shit show anyway. And it was just a tough month for me. So, like I said, fresh hell in 2019.
December was also tough for me. As people probably know, I am a grad student and a lot of stuff was due in December.
So I know, you're like, I'm writing forever.
All I was doing was anytime somebody wanted to hang out with me, I was like, oh, I'm writing right now. And everyone was like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have lots to talk about today. We are going to talk about Trump making posters of himself, which is a real news story. Y'all, I've been, you know, my Christmas gift to myself was I was pretty cursory with my like keeping up with the news. Like I needed a little bit of like refresh and recharge and everything. Yeah. And of course, that means the government shuts down and, you know, everything is in chaos and Chuck Schumer is an ass clown and all of
Nancy
this.
Pelosi
but
wears a badass red coat that no one
exactly,
can buy because it's out of stock.
Exactly.
Everything
right,
goes
all
to
this
crap.
Shit. Exactly. Everything goes directly to hell. But I didn't even know about the Trump poster, which was just happened a couple days ago. Until like this morning, and I was like, this cannot actually be real, but y'all, friends, it's fucking real.
It's
so
real.
We're gonna get a little bit into that just because it is hilarious and also really indicative of like this toxic masculinity that has spread like a cancer more rapidly than it ever really has felt in the past. But
and
that's a whole separate thing.
Yeah, and the cult-like nature of all of this. It's like he's trying to make himself into this weird, which is what happens in authoritarian countries, where the leader, which is usually a man, tries to make himself all like machismo and like really, really manly or whatever. Picture Putin writing.
Smart Varsha, which is my name for you. And I you know, when it's obvious you're much smarter than I am. Has there ever been a female dictator or a female sort of authoritarian leader?
I can't think of one. And this does not mean there wasn't one. But I can't think of one. And it also depends on how you define authoritarian, because there have been badass queens of England, you know, like Victoria and Elizabeth the First and stuff. But
it's hard to define queens. Yeah, in other countries and female leaders that, again, it's also based on perspective, because a lot of female leaders were kind of especially historical ones, were cast in a very negative light because they were female leaders, not necessarily because they were dictators or authoritarians.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you can make an argument that like Margaret Thatcher was kind of problematic, to say the least. But also what's really interesting is in recent times, Marine Le Pen is one of the few like far right fascistic type leaders who actually lost her election in France. There have been other right. cases in Europe where the far right lost their elections, but Marine Le Pen is one of the few. And it's, I would say it's because she doesn't really fit the mold of what the far right is looking for. I think that probably played a role. You know, she was right. definitely was far right. Maybe for some people it wasn't enough, right? So I feel like right. the manliness or the maleness of this authoritarian rise that we're seeing across the world is really, really important. And yeah. Donald Trump is paying attention to that. And
right.
He has.
Well, so Hellions, I'll pitch it to you, and Barsha and I will look into this too. But if anyone knows about authoritarian regimes or is an expert in this, if there are like prominent female ones that just don't get talked about, I would actually be very interested to hear about that. So, you know, you can hit us up on Twitter and Facebook in our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone. But yeah, so we're gonna talk about that. We're also gonna talk about Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi being yes. elected as Speaker of the House.
Once and future Speaker, yes.
Exactly. And then we're also going to talk about this story that popped up about the Trump administration trying to roll back anti-discrimination rules, which is nothing new, but this is a very specific and interesting way that they're going about it. And it has to do with something called disparate impact. So we'll talk about that when we get to that section. It's very interesting and actually quite scary. So Barsha, packed show as always, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too. I am slowly recovering from Devin's amazing New Year's Eve party. So.
Oh my God, it was such a mess. Oh God, Barsha, it was such a mess.
It was such a mess, but it was so much fun. And
it was really fun.
In case anybody's kids are listening, I'm just going to say this right now. I had a lot to drink, but I had the best whiskey of my life. And
I know. Alex pulled out his special whiskey.
Yeah, and I have Alex Handy to thank for that. So I just want to thank Alex Handy for that. That was amazing. Also, he has this bottle of rum, which I will go to LA and buy a bottle for myself because I can never drink another bottle of rum ever again. That is the one.
It's amazing, right?
So
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Okay, but now to Game of Thrones. Okay, Devin, so what does Game of Thrones have to do with the Trump administration?
Well, for a while, it was just, you know, Democrats are coming, right? Sort of co-opting this, like, winter is coming, Game of Thrones. You know, the idea was that this big change, this big thing was looming. And so that was sort of the start. It was, like, kind of a clever way to use that, like, a popular culture reference. And then, you know, like, 2 years later, the hip and cool Trump administration is like, cool, let's use some of that Game of Thrones slang. So, but here's what's interesting. Trump had a cabinet meeting, which let's also remember that this cabinet is full of vacancies and deputies sitting in, and it's a hot fucking Mattis. Oh, that's it. Something else like I didn't miss, but like Mattis resigned because yeah. Trump wanted to pull all of our troops out of Syria. And he was like, you don't know what you're fucking doing. Boy, bye.
Yeah.
And then Trump called him a loser, and the whole thing. Like, it was
the whole thing. Also, basically, reasonable minds can disagree on Syria and Afghanistan policy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one thing is for sure. Actually, two things can be true at the same time. Basically, Mattis was, quote unquote, I'm saying this with really, really big air quotes, moderating influence on Donald Trump in the
right.
sense that he had military experience, right? So he was right. remotely qualified to be head of DOD. But the second thing can also be true that this is why Mattis resigned. This, not Charlottesville, yeah. not the hundreds of other things that are stupid that Donald Trump has done, not the transgender military ban, not pulling
right.
out of the Iran deal. This is why you resigned. So two things can be true
yeah.
at once, that this is going to be a really, really weird year when it comes to military and DOD.
Yeah.
And that Mattis, he doesn't get my sympathy here. I'm not like.
No. Oh, I'm not sympathizing with Mattis. I'm just saying that I think it's very indicative
yes,
of
I
what's
agree.
Going on here.
Yeah.
When Mattis, who, like you said, didn't resign all over all this other shit, and you know, you could maybe make an argument that it wasn't even necessarily Syria that pushed him over the edge. But you know, Mattis was someone that Trump, especially during his campaign, touted mm-hmm. as, you know, this general who loves me, who's going, you know, it kind of lent him a lot of this credibility. And so
yeah.
now he's no longer there. It will be interesting to see how that affects. But anyway, we're getting off topic because we have to talk about this very important poster. So it was like a 90-minute cabinet meeting
yeah.
That was a hot mess, that was just full of lies. But what the elephant in the room was, in the middle of the conference table, there was a huge movie-sized poster of Trump, and they styled it to look like a Game of Thrones poster, and all it said was sanctions are coming November 4th, yeah. Which, first of all, the date on there is two months ago, and sanctions are coming, and he was referring to sanctions on Iran, which were repealed under Obama because of the Iran deal. But that was not super clear. And if I'm not wrong, they didn't even really talk about that specifically in this cabinet meeting.
Yeah. Then he has another poster, right? He had two.
Oh, well, okay. So no one talked. So the weirdest fucking thing here is that no one said anything about the poster. It was just sitting there.
It's just sitting there.
No
on the
one
table,
said anything.
Rolled out.
Yeah.
Right. And so, the poster, I think there's two of them. I saw one on Twitter a while ago, which was like, sanctions are coming. And it was really weird and stupid, right? Because it makes no sense. And HBO was like, is this copyright infringement?
No. Okay, no. Know. HBO had maybe my favorite tweet of all time. They said, quote, how do you say trademark infringement in Dothraki? Which, for any of you who don't know, the Dothraki are a race of people in Game of Thrones, and they have their own language. But
yeah.
I'm sorry I over-explained that joke, but it was really fucking funny and I laughed out loud. So, but then it gets weirder though, because no one commented on this and the White House didn't put out a comment. And then this morning on Trump's Instagram, he releases another poster. This is just like a headshot of him that says, the wall is coming, but in the Game of Thrones script, you know, like the O has like the two lines through it. Yeah. So it's like very obviously a reference to Game of Thrones. And you're just like, first of all, and Varsha made a really good point about the point of the wall in the show, which we'll get to in 5 seconds. But first, I just want to say, some poor graphic designer who works in the White House had to design these. Someone had to make, it was probably a whole fucking team who was put on the task of designing these posters. And so government resources were spent to make these posters. I really just want to like throw that out there. And so for anyone who's like Republicans or deficit hawks, which by the way, the deficit has risen $2 trillion since Trump took office. But I just want to talk about, there was some amount of money that was spent on designing these posters.
Yeah. And I'm just saying, like, it makes no sense to, at least in my head, to roll out a policy. It is his signature policy. It's a
bananas policy, but it's his signature policy,
and he's rolling it out in meme form. The president of the United States is rolling out his signature policy in the form of a meme on Instagram.
And what Varsha said to me when we were texting about this is, she was like, the whole point of Game of Thrones is that the wall doesn't fucking work.
It doesn't
work. The White Walkers can go over the wall. Yeah. Like, that's the whole point, that the wall is bullshit. And so to use that reference specifically for the wall is coming, like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Like, the wall is destroyed. So I'm not caught up, but I'm like reading and I'm slowly going to get caught up. But the wall is destroyed in the most recent season. Sorry, spoilers. And also, there's actually a really great clip. I forget which season it's in, but Jon Snow is talking about it. And he's actually saying, like, yeah, so they're born on the wrong side of the wall. Doesn't mean they're evil or doesn't mean they're monsters. I think that's the line. And I'm like, even Jon Snow, a fictional character, gets
who
the point.
Knows nothing.
Who knows nothing of. Oh my god, did you just make that joke?
I did. Okay. I'm sorry. It was
a great joke. I fucking loved it. Okay, so even Jon Snow, who knows nothing, is able to point out the like the logical fallacy of the wall in a fictional universe, like where, you know, there is no relation to 2018 or Donald Trump. It makes no sense, right? And so the past few days, since the wall is coming thing, or since Donald Trump has been like really pushing down on this, like, or like doubling down on this wall thing, Republicans have been talking about how walls work. You know, name one wall that doesn't work. And I'm like, the Maginot Line, the Great Wall of China, every fucking wall in history, they usually don't fucking work. That's why they're walls. They're really primitive technology. Okay, they don't actually work. The Berlin, and so somebody gave an example of the Berlin Wall. And I'm like, are you supporting the Berlin Wall? Is that what you're doing? You're supporting the Berlin Wall. It makes no sense.
Right. Do we want to be East Berlin? Is that what we're going for here?
Yeah,
because
I don't understand. Are we trying to replicate the USSR? It makes no sense. But yeah, basically that's what really bugged me about this. As a nerd, it was like, this is not a good analogy. You know, if the meme is good.
Oh, I was personally offended as a nerd. Yeah.
Yeah. Game respect. Yeah. If the meme is good, game respects game. But the meme wasn't good.
Memes, especially in this day, memes in this day and age can be deployed politically, and that says a lot about where we are as a species. But let's just go ahead and throw that out there. But I was personally offended by this because it just you know what? They're not cool. And I know that's such like a slippery term. And I like telling this story. When I was a junior in college, I was there for the summer. I took summer classes. And I took a dance class for like half a credit just for something to do. And so I was taking this dance class and I was like really into it. And like, I'm not a great dancer, but like, you know, I was getting into it. And the teacher, you know, so we were showing her like the dance that we had moved and she was watching us do it. She comes up to me and she's like, "Devin, you need to be more cool."
I'm so sorry, Devin.
So obviously I'm not cool, and that's fine. But like, I also don't try to like make memes.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically the 2019 is off to a weird start. It's off to a really weird start. And it's just proof the president can't even, he doesn't even have to read the books. He can watch the TV show. The TV show is very engaging.
It's very engaging. Yeah. So that was, you know, and I really, again, like, I kind of want to link this back to like we were saying at the top of the show, this like toxic masculinity and this cultism. When we're talking about like making posters. And also the other thing is that the whole thing about Game of Thrones as well, in addition to walls not working, which is just ironic. The whole point is like, you know, everyone's after the throne, right? You win or you die. Yeah. Like everyone wants to be on the top. Everyone wants to be that authoritarian dictator. They want to be in that seat. And so again, using it as a reference, I don't want to like give too much credence to the thought process of people who work for Trump and Trump himself. But like, there is something where I'm just like, the themes of that show are scary and make me uneasy enough as it is. And then to tie it into what Trump's doing in our very real non-fictional political landscape, I mean, that's kind of a little overwhelming, right? Am I the only one here, or is that it, or did that it really didn't sit well with me because of this, you know, this idea that like, you know, you're invoking this show to say like, and look, I'm not saying that, you know, the whole thing, Democrats are coming, and like, I did think that was funny and that's fine, but I think there's a difference between putting that on protest posters and having an official White House staff member create a movie style poster of a picture of you and putting it on the table during a cabinet meeting. I can't believe I'm saying those words out loud.
I mean, I think all we have to really gain from this and what we've learned today, Devin, is that Stephen Miller is Joffrey. That's what we need to know.
Yes.
That's what we need to know.
Thank you. All right, Varsha. So Nancy Pelosi was elected as Speaker of the House earlier today, actually. We're recording on a Thursday night, because Varsha had to get back to Berkeley. And, you know, earlier this week was New Year's and the aforementioned shit show that I threw at my house. Yeah. And, you know, no one was up to recording on the first. Let's just put it that way. This morning. So can you talk about a little bit about that and what that sort of means?
Yeah. So I think the best thing about today was looking at Nancy Pelosi and her hand on that fucking gavel and holding that gavel. And it brought me so much joy. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine and I haven't felt this hopeful in years, you know? And for some reason, I was on the bus back to Berkeley today and I'm watching the live stream on my phone, wasting a lot of data. Because I don't give a fuck. And I'm like, oh my God, I haven't felt this happy in so long. Like, Nancy Pelosi just gives me so much joy. And people can call me a fangirl or whatever. But the thing is, Nancy Pelosi is the single most skilled legislator of our generation. Of many generations. She's probably the single most skilled legislator. Probably the single most skilled legislator of the modern 20th century and the 21st century.
I mean, I would agree with you. Well, and you know what I love? So Nancy Pelosi did an interview with Elle magazine about kind of becoming Speaker of the House and all this other stuff. And she said, and they asked her specifically about how it felt to kind of get all this hate, right? She was cast as the villain by Republicans and Democrats alike. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of forget, we let it go, and that's fine. But like, a lot of Democrats ran on this platform in their districts that they won't vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker mm-hmm. of the House. And so she's really cast as this villain. And what she had to say about it, I think for me, just really encapsulates why it's so important to have women in leadership roles and why it's so important to have female role models and you know, femme identified role models. Because she said, you know, honestly, I have talked in this interview, I've talked about this subject more than I've thought about it in the last year.
Ass.
Basically, like, yeah, basically, you don't live rent free in my head, haters. And then she also said, I take it as a sign of respect. They wouldn't come after me if they weren't afraid of me. And then she said, and I thought this was so important. She said, I am a master legislator. She said that about herself. And the thing is that women are taught not to say that about themselves. You're not supposed to say, I am good at what I do. You're supposed to demur and, like, you know, let their, you know, whatever. I don't know. But she was just like, no, I'm amazing at my job. She's a fundraising juggernaut. Like, she is the reason why the Democratic Party could fucking fund all of these progressive campaigns. And she said it. She said it out loud. She said, I'm amazing at my job, and that's why they're coming after me, and I don't think about you anyway, so thank you,
and
next. So, right? I mean, it was like,
it was
amazing.
And I'm watching Representative Hakeem Jeffries introduce Nancy Pelosi, you know, and endorse her for speaker today, and it was riveting. It was amazing. Like, Hakeem Jeffries should introduce everybody. When I go into a room, Hakeem Jeffries should introduce me because he's so good at it. But it was so clear that everybody in the caucus, regardless of where they were a month ago, if they were against her or enthusiastically for her or maybe lukewarm, they realized in that moment, on that day, they were like, fuck this. She is clearly the best that we have right now. And so you made this point about how Republicans and Democrats basically spent the past year villainizing her, right? Vilifying her. And the thing is, the same thing is happening with other Democratic women. So not just Elizabeth Warren, we're not going to talk about her presidential campaign, but not just with her, and not just with Kirsten Gillibrand or Kamala Harris, but also with progressive darling and one of my favorite congresswomen, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? So people are obsessed with AOC, obsessed with her, specifically the right wing. Like, the right wing released a video today of AOC dancing when she was in college, and they're like, oh my God, she had fun. How can she be a poor person? And I'm like, she's living rent-free in your heads. But it's also true of all these,
right?
And, you know, we have nothing against them, but it's also true of, like, of certain moderate Dems and people who are Democrats, but only in name, who are just like, I don't know if AOC is really going the right way for the party and all this stuff. Just like Nancy Pelosi was able to live rent-free in the heads of Democrats and Republicans alike for the past few years, AOC is doing the same thing. And we are not going to let the same thing happen to future Democratic women that we did almost let happen to Nancy Pelosi, where we said, oh, because everybody dislikes her, we should toss her aside, right? We can't let that happen. And that's why January 3rd today felt so amazing, because for once, it felt like Democrats were like, oh no, we have the long game, and the long game includes having Nancy Pelosi as speaker for at least 2 more years because she's a fucking badass.
Well, and that was part of her deal. She said she won't be speaker in 2021, probably because she's going to retire. You know, everyone talks about her age, right? And no one ever mentions the fact that Trump is the oldest president we've ever had, or how old Chuck, I'm an ass clown, Schumer
is. Because they have penises.
But
I don't understand what it is. I think
exactly. Apparently that's like an anti-aging. So I mean, look, because she's probably going to retire. And the other thing is, if you don't think Nancy Pelosi knows exactly, like, isn't already mentoring and pulling people up to be the next master legislator, you're drunk. Because Of course she is. Because she knows she's not going to do this forever.
She's a Democratic powerhouse. She's a badass. And also, so this whole shutdown, right? It's all about the wall. Because before our break, what happened before the new Congress was sworn in today was the Senate passed 100-0. Nobody voted against it. A continuing resolution. The continuing resolution was just going to keep the government open, not give any funding for the wall. And Paul Ryan, unemployed Paul Ryan, said, no, we're not going to vote for that because I'm a jackass, right? And so on day one, today, Nancy Pelosi, guess what they passed? They passed a fucking continuing resolution with no funding for the wall. And every single time Donald Trump asked Nancy Pelosi for funding for the wall, you know what she says? She says, fuck no. That's basically what she says. She
literally never. How about does never
yes,
work for
that's
you?
That's exactly what she says. That's what she said when she was saving Social Security under Bush. And that's what she said today. She was literally saying, nothing for the wall. How about nothing for the wall? That's a direct quote from her. Right. So
Yeah. How about nothing? Does nothing work? No. Look, you can have good faith issues mm-hmm. with Nancy Pelosi. You absolutely can. I do, you know, but the fact of the matter is like, we have to look at what we have here, right? This is not checkers. And no matter what Trump is making us believe, this is a little bit bigger than that. And I would just also like to point out that this incoming freshman class is the most diverse, mm-hmm. the most female that has ever happened in ever. Yep. In 200 plus years of Congress, this is the most diverse and most female it has ever been. Speaking of AOC, she posted a picture of the women of mm-hmm. color, of, you know, a couple of women of color in this freshman class. And I swear to God, my first thought was, this is what T Swiftie's girl gang should look like instead of a whole bunch of like blonde models, right? Like this is it.
Listen,
y'all,
I know they're legislators and I know I should take them seriously, but all I want is a reality show with them and just them talking about policy 24/7, you know, with the camera running. That's what I want. Right. They are so cool. Like,
well, I mean, that's kind of what, but honestly, AOC with her Instagram stories and kind of becoming a social media, that's kind of what she's doing. She is using the public's obsession with something like a reality show and using it to get policy out into the ether. And that's why we need young thinkers. That's why we need older thinkers. That's why we need women of color. That's why we need disabled women. We need to really think beyond what we've been doing here. And we need to think beyond. And that's, you know, that was the argument for a lot of people who were like, well, Nancy Pelosi isn't beyond, mm-hmm. right? She's, you know, we need some new blood. But, and here's for me where that argument falls apart. Because I'm not saying that we don't need to move beyond or that AOC isn't doing an amazing job or that Ayanna Pressley isn't going to blow us all away or, you know, the fact that we have two Native American women in this freshman class. I mean, it's
two of the first
ridiculous.
Muslim women
in a great
of Congress
way.
Ever. Right.
Yeah.
It's not exactly.
Ever.
I agree with you completely. It's not that Nancy Pelosi isn't amazing. And it's not that Nancy Pelosi shouldn't one day retire. It's that people fundamentally for the past month and a half have been misunderstanding the role of Speaker of the House. The role of the Speaker is to whip the fucking votes. And I'm going to quote Alexandra Pelosi on this, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, because she was interviewed yesterday and she said of her mother, she said she'll cut your head off and you won't even know you're bleeding. That's what a speaker should do, okay? A speaker doesn't have to be the face of the party.
And that only comes with time and experience. Yeah. And I think that's actually something we can learn from now unemployed Paul Ryan, is that in a lot of ways, he was too inexperienced, right? They thought he was going to be this like fresh new direction of the Republican Party. And he fucked that up real good, real fast. And so the thing is like we need the new fresh faces, as it were, but we also need people who have the time and experience and deep understanding of what's going on here when no one else fucking does to whip the party, to lead, to do it. And I don't understand why both things cannot be true at the same time, right? Like, I don't think anyone would say, I mean, let's make it real basic here. So would you want a freshman in high school who is like 14 to be the student body president?
No.
I mean, no one thinks that. Like, no one thinks that's a good idea.
It makes no sense.
And that's just, I'm talking like, that's so basic, right? And it kind of feels the same way here. It's like, would you want a freshman running something that you really need more time to understand? I don't know. That maybe that was a bad example.
But it makes sense, because basically, like, what people think is that they think it's mutually exclusive. They think that if we choose Nancy Pelosi as speaker for 2 more years, that means we're going to have to stick by her policy preferences for the next 2 years or for the next 6 years, however long she's speaker. But that's not the case. That's not how democracy works. It is 100% true that the new freshman Democratic class, and also the whole Democratic caucus in the House and in the Senate, is more progressive than it was 2 years ago, right? Because it's more progressive, that means that Nancy Pelosi has to adjust her expectations. And also, she has to understand what her caucus and also the people who vote Democratic want. And so just because she's speaker doesn't mean you have to listen to everything she says, mainly because she's not the type of asshat speaker like Paul Ryan is, right? If her caucus wants to bring something to a vote, she's going to let it come to a fucking vote. Because an asshat speaker would be like, oh, you're fighting me for speaker? I'm going to pull some underhanded move and get you not to even run. That's not what she did. She literally said, come at me, don't miss. She's a badass. And also, like, I just want to point out, you mentioned like the young blood argument. My favorite tweet of the day was, I forget which journalist tweeted this, but they tweeted, Seth Moulton has quietly placed his vote for Pelosi as speaker. Best tweet of the fucking day. Because even Seth Moulton at the end of the fucking day realized, oh yeah, I can't embarrass myself anymore. It's sort of pathetic now. And voted for Nancy Pelosi for speaker. But, you know, with all that talk about Nancy Pelosi, also one of the coolest things of the day were the amazing women that got sworn in today. Not just like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Cherise Davids and Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar had this amazing picture yesterday of her and her father, who came into DC years ago as refugees, and now they're back in DC and she's getting sworn in as a member of Congress, and I cried. I cried a little. She went with her dad to the swearing-in ceremony. Yeah. I cried. But also, Kyrsten Sinema, senator from Arizona, she wore this badass outfit to get sworn in front of Mike Pence or by Mike Pence. And Mike Pence probably knows this. Kyrsten Sinema is the first openly bisexual senator in the United States history. Love her, right? Today was a good day for women.
Today was a good day for women. And I think if nothing else, we can hold on to that. And just because there's a lot of hard shit coming and there's been a lot of hard shit that's come to pass, we are allowed to hold on to that today. We're allowed to hold on to the fact that this was a good day for women. This was a good day for women of color. This was a good day for the Democratic Party. And, you know, I feel like there are going to be challenges and this is going to be a shit show of a year, but I feel like we might be able to do it.
I think so too. I really do. Also, apparently, Rashida Tlaib is another amazing Democratic congressperson that was recently sworn in. And she was at an event recently. This is just like a couple hours ago. And so apparently she was talking about what her son said to her after she got sworn in. And one second, let me find the quote, because it's a great quote. So her son says to her, look, mama, you won. Bullies don't win. And she replies, you're right. They don't. And we're going to go in and impeach the motherfucker. Rashida Tlaib said that. She said motherfucker in front of people. Badass.
Badass. Badass. Well, then also, I would also like to go back to Nancy Pelosi for one hot second, because if we'll remember, after AOC was elected and she was there with the protesters in front of Nancy Pelosi's office about environmental policy and reform. And so Nancy Pelosi, what did she do? She went outside and talked to them. And talk to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, this is not a woman that's just going to shut herself in her office and not listen to what's going on. And I feel like the faster we understand that, the better the next.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean we're not going to have to hold her and the rest of Democratic leadership in the House accountable for the things that we want. It just means that there are certain jobs that certain people are really good at, but because it's a democracy, you have to make sure they're doing the job in the way that you want them to. Right? That's it. And that's why Nancy Pelosi is the best speaker for the next 2 years. And I'm so, so excited. And also, I'm going to D.C. tomorrow. And the best thing about going to D.C. is that I bought an imitation Nancy Pelosi red coat. I'm going to wear that for 2 fucking weeks. It's going to be great.
Yeah. There's a picture of her on our Instagram. You should go look at what Varsha looks like in that coat and follow us.
Okay, Devin, what's going on with the Trump administration and civil rights?
So this is a kind of insidious, like, problem we're having here. I mean, it has been since Trump has taken office. But something that they're trying to do is roll back civil rights laws and regulations. There is something in, you know, federal regulations called disparate impact. Basically, what they're trying to do is remove disparate impact regulations. So, and this is going to apply to discrimination laws in education, housing, employment, all sorts of things. So disparate impact basically means that if an employer or a school, for example, has their policy that's facially neutral, so it's not overtly discriminatory, but the impact of that policy ends up being discriminatory in any way. So let's say it's a facially neutral policy, but as a result, it's only people of color who suffer. So a good example from this Washington Post article about this was at a university, students of color were more likely to be suspended or reprimanded for basically protesting. And they're saying that that's the disparate impact. So the facially neutral, like, policy there is that if a student is being disruptive or protesting, the university can take action. But what was actually happening was that students of color were 5 times more likely to be suspended or reprimanded for protesting. So that's the idea of disparate impact. And so basically what it is what we talk about on the show all the time is that it's intent versus impact. So even if your intent is not to discriminate, but the impact is the impact is discriminatory, that's not okay either. There's even a name for this. There's disparate impact, which doesn't mean to be discriminatory, or at least, you know, not in theory. And then there's disparate intent, which is in fact designed to be discriminatory. And so the reason why disparate impact is so important is because it's really fucking difficult to prove when someone is being racist on purpose, right? There's a lot of, you know, you can just, you're like, oh, you don't know what's in their head, right? You know, like, you get that a lot, or like, oh, I didn't mean to be racist, but I just had a better candidate, or whatever it might be, or you know, we rent to everyone, but like, we rejected these applications. And it's really hard to say if that was supposed to be or was deliberately racist or not. And so disparate impact analysis is often used in court cases to show that a policy, while, like I said, is facially neutral, ends up discriminating against people. So the Trump administration is trying to roll back these laws. This is not new, by the way. This is something that conservatives have been trying to do for years, but like, neither of the Bushes were interested in touching them. The Obama administration obviously was not. In fact, the Obama administration strengthened the education disparate impact regulations. And the problem here is that this is a little bit confusing, but depending on which section of the Civil Rights Act you're looking at, some of these disparate impact clauses are not, they're there by, it's like a regulatory thing. And so the Trump administration has a lot of leeway to change regulatory policies with just like a comment period. It's kind of why Health and Human Services can do things that seem abhorrent, and all you can do is go and comment on.
Yeah, what the Trump administration is trying to do is make it possible so where if a plaintiff does sue, right, they have to provide clear evidence that a company or institution or whatever is trying to discriminate, not just prove the impact that it's happening to discriminate. And if you end up doing that, if you make it that requirement, then it's going to be impossible to actually prove intent in a lot of cases, which is going to make it really, really hard to bring litigation or even win at litigation, right? To even win at litigation or even bring this litigation if right. You have to prove the intent, not just prove the impact. And so it's asking them to go another step. And that's going to make it really, really hard to bring any kind of litigation because it's really hard to prove that there's bad intent, even if there is bad intent.
Right. If not impossible. I mean, again, there are so many ways around this. And even currently, there is a defense against this for people being sued is that mm-hmm. if there's no other way to do business, if this is the only policy that will work in this case, then then you can continue to do it, even if it has disparate impact. So, I mean, obviously, we've already set up a system where people can get out of this, right? Civil rights is a very squishy thing in this country, and intentionally so, obviously, because we're racist. And, you know, but so what that means is what they're just trying to do is make it impossible to, almost impossible. I mean, I wouldn't say completely impossible, but overtly racist policies rarely, or sexist policies, or, you know, and a lot of these policies don't even extend to disabled people or, you know, trans people in a lot of cases. So, I mean, this is still a very narrow definition of civil rights. And
yeah, this could also, yeah, this could really, really affect not just people of who are racial minorities, but also the LGBTQ community when it comes to housing and other types of legal protections that they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to be really, really frustrating. And it's another, like, the cruelty is
the point.
Like, the point, right? It's another thing of the cruelty is the point. Because as you made a keep, you said this from the beginning, right? Republicans have been trying to do this for years. This is not a new thing Trump just came up with one night, because he probably has no idea what the fuck disparate impact even means.
Oh, he has no idea.
It's something that his administration, his DOJ, has probably been wanting to do for decades. Or the Republican Party is probably
wanting. Well, actually, you know what? In this case, he might actually know what disparate impact is. You know why? Right. Because he was fucking fined by HUD because he was denying apartments to Black people. So actually, you know what? He might know what this is. But also just points to this deep-seated white supremacy and toxic masculinity that, yes, Trump is exacerbating, but is not the architect of. And it really just it puts in sharp relief that this is an administration that is not an outlier in our political system or even everyday life, that this is a sort of manifestation of maybe one extreme, but it's not an outlier. This is absolutely baked into who we are as a country. And just because this asshat has risen to the top, that doesn't mean that this is new. This is not fucking new.
I agree totally. And it's not even just a national thing. There's also global impacts as well. And there's also ways that our relationships with other countries affect this. And our actions in the United States affect relationships with other countries. So as people probably know, Brazil's new president is a right winger, really, really right wing, Bolsonaro. He is basically a fascist. And the administration, Trump, as well as Nikki Haley, as well as Netanyahu from Israel, have all embraced Brazil's leader. And it's really, really weird to do that. But literally hours after Bolsonaro is inaugurated, he strips LGBT concerns from the ministry of the new human rights ministry. Hours after he's inaugurated, he strips these concerns, and now LGBT couples in Brazil,
like, he had that ready. He had that in the pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Because throughout his campaign, he's literally been saying, "I could never love my son if he was homosexual," and he's been saying other horrific things as well. But literally hours after he's put into office, this is the first thing that he does, and now LGBT couples across the country are basically rushing to get married. On the not so low chance that LGBT people are targeted even more so in Brazil after this. And so it's really scary. And I feel like there's effects, from Brazil I feel like there are effects in our relationship with Brazil as well as with other countries. That the Trump administration is fundamentally changing. And one of those effects is how we look at human rights and how we look at civil rights and how we look at basically symbolism in general. Right, this idea that even though it was not 100% held up in the Obama administration or the Bush administration or Clinton, definitely not in any of those three administrations, there was this, weak idea, but pretty strong idea that America, at the very least, respected certain types of civil rights. And I know it took America a long fucking time to even legalize gay marriage. And there is still rampant discrimination in housing, education, and a lot of other arenas in terms of the U.S. government as well as in companies. But this idea that we can hold hands with a dictator who's clearly just said he's going to be a fucking dictator. It's scary that the Trump administration is rolling back.
It's fundamentally changing.
It's fundamentally changing what America is depicted as internationally. And so Trump rolling back these regulations, even though it's something Republicans have wanted to do for decades, him actually doing it is fundamentally transformative. And it's really important to look at the kind of signal America is sending to the world. So think back to when Saudi Arabia murdered that journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, and the fact that Trump did basically nothing. And the Senate had to step up. And the Senate has still basically done nothing to really condemn Saudi Arabia.
Nothing.
The fact is, this is making it really, really hard for journalists across the world to do their fucking jobs. And so when Bolsonaro is embraced by President Trump and Trump himself is rolling back regulations that can impact civil discrimination lawsuits in the United States, of course, Bolsonaro is going to be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to pass some laws that are going to mess with LGBT rights in my country. President Trump just tweeted, the USA is with you, which is a direct quote, right? So it's not just impacting people and families in the United States, even though it definitely is, it's going to impact people across the world, and it's going to impact our relationship with these countries for decades to come.
Which will then in turn impact how we treat our citizens. It's a whole big fucking circle of crap and vomit. Sorry, that was the most disgusting thing I could think of, so I apologize. All right, Varsha, we're going to do a quick dickwad of the week. This is a... it's not the first time he's been a dickwad, but so who has the dishonor this week?
Yeah. So basically a couple days ago, Politico and the New York Times released a story about how women and men who worked on Bernie Sanders' 2016 campaign were basically seeking a meeting with the senator and his advisors to discuss the issues of sexual violence and harassment on the 2016 campaign. And so I'm going to preface this by saying this apparently happens on a lot of fucking campaigns. Female staffers and male staffers have been harassed and assaulted on a lot of campaigns because it's a really tough fucking job. Hillary Clinton had to address this on issues with her campaign in 2008. I'm sure this has happened on other campaigns as well. And so apparently there were staffers on Bernie Sanders' campaign who felt that this was an issue when they were on his campaign. And the reason he's the dickwad is because he does an interview with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper asks him about this. And what he says is, tell me if you can point out the problem with this quote-unquote apology, is he apologized to, quote, any woman who feels like she wasn't treated properly. And then he said, quote, was a little busy running around the country trying to make the case for being president, and he didn't know what was happening. So basically, that's his apology, is that I, one, did not know this was happening, which, you know what? Benefit of the doubt, I'm sure you didn't, because this is probably really low level. This does not reflect on you. It's not me saying Bernie Sanders harassed these women or whatever. That is not what anybody is saying. No one is saying Hillary Clinton harassed that woman on her 2008 campaign. It's more that, okay, fine, you didn't know about it, but that's not how you apologize, and that's not how you move forward, especially on a truly cynical level. You want to be president in 2020. One of the major issues that has come up from 2017 to 2020 is Me Too and sexual harassment in the workplace. Maybe this is not how you should kick off your campaign, by saying, I was a little busy and I'm sorry if any woman felt like she wasn't treated properly. Not if...
Yeah, I always hate that too.
This double couching of the apology, that I'm sorry if you felt like I hurt you, not if I'm sorry if I hurt you, right? I'm not saying this came from the top and people at the top level of Bernie Sanders' campaign were engaging this type of behavior. But when Anderson Cooper asks you a straightforward question, all you have to do, because if we're giving him the benefit of the doubt, his hands are clean in this, realistically, right? He didn't know this. So if he doesn't know it, he should just say, I am so sorry this happened to women and men on my campaign, and I am gladly excited. I am gladly willing to hear their concerns and think about how we can do better in 2020 if I decide to run. It's that fucking simple.
Oh, hey, look. A couple of women in California are doing Bernie Sanders' emotional work. What else is fucking new?
And so, again, 2019, my resolution was to not hold grudges. And so I'm doing my best not to hold on to old grudges. But again, if one day down the line, Senator Sanders decides to run, I hope he addresses this better, because it doesn't look good, right? And again, every single person who's going to run is going to make a lot of gaffes, right? Senator Harris has some issues when she was prosecutor that she probably will have to deal with if she decides to run. Senator Warren has made some mistakes when it comes to her DNA, right? Senator Gillibrand had some conservative views when she was a congressperson. But again, you should address them properly. And the reason Sanders is the dickwad is because he failed the easiest fucking test. Because no one was accusing him of anything. And that's what I fucking hate about men who have to talk about sexual harassment in the workplace. They treat it like it's an accusation against their character and not an institutional problem that they are allowed to help solve.
Yeah, because they think it is. Because it is. They see it as an attack on them because they know, right? Because this is always the argument. Oh, well, now we can't make jokes in the workplace, or like, oh, now I can't go on dates with women. I'm like, no one wants to date you anyway, Chad, fuck off. But it's because they know that their behavior has also been inappropriate and they're feeling the shame secondhand. And again, I'm not accusing Bernie Sanders of everything. I'm saying this is how a lot of men feel when these sort of accusations come out, because they think back and they think, oh, maybe it was inappropriate, or maybe they know it was inappropriate, or maybe something happened where they know they were in the wrong. And so it feels like an accusation against them. And then men stick up for their own, especially fucking white men, right? They hold that line. They hold that motherfucking line like it's their job, because you know what? It is. If they want to keep their jobs, they have to hold that line. So Bernie Sanders, you are the dickwad. Go fuck yourself. The first of 2019. Congratulations, Bernie Sanders. 3 whole years after the presidential campaign, you're still pissing women off.
The thing that really just bothers me is it was so easy not to fuck this up. It really was. Because I was trying to let it go. I really was. Because last week, when the first story came out, the campaign, or I think it was like one of his PACs or something, released a statement that had no denials in it at all. Right? It wasn't him, but it was like his campaign or something, and released a statement saying like, there was no denials, like, yes, we will talk to these people. And then he goes on this interview and fucks it up.
All right, Varsha. So today, instead of a gratitude check, and instead of asking about your New Year's resolutions, because resolutions are a little shaky, we were actually talking about this in the Dickwads Be Gone group. Resolutions are hard. I mean, especially because you don't want to set yourself up to fail necessarily. But can tell me one thing that you want to do in 2019. And I don't mean something like, oh, I want to work out more, or, you know, I want to let go of grudges, but something like that you just want to do.
I want to eat more burritos. This is just my thing. Like, so I'm at your party on December 31st, and I'm thinking about, you know, everyone's talking about resolutions, and I'm just like, I have some concrete real resolutions, but also I want to eat more burritos. I feel like I didn't get to eat enough. And that's one thing I really want to do. But also, like, a concrete thing I really want to do was to feel more like happy with the way I look. And the way I decided to do that was to take a selfie every day. And it's been 3 days and I've done it, and it's going well.
That's
those
great.
Are the two things. Eat more burritos and take a selfie a day, because I want to know that I look better. Even though I know I look okay, I want to, like, know it.
Right, right. Yeah, well, so for me this year, I want to get back to doing more creative stuff. Like, I used to draw all the time. I'm very crafty. I crochet. I just made a macrame wall hanging for my wall because I'm your hippie grandma from 1974. But yeah, so I want to do more of that. I want to draw more. I want to maybe write more. Just let my creative side out a little bit more. So that's my one thing for 2019.
That's awesome.
So yeah. So Hellions, if you have anything that you want to do, resolution, something you want to do, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. We would love to start a discussion.
Okay, Devin, what are some action items that people can do after listening to the show?
So I think for today, it's our first show of 2019. It's our first show of season 3, aka year 3. I think going forward, you know, we talked about how this is a great day for women. This is a great day for Democrats. It's time to build the community. I talk about our community all the time and how amazing it is. But, you know, find your community. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us at a Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/dickwadsbegone. You can find us on Instagram, which is instagram.com/hellbentmedia. And then, of course, on Twitter, which we are always on Twitter. So, which is our twitter.com/hellbentpod. So connect with people, get into a community, get the support that you're going to need. Because like I said, 2019 is going to bring its own fresh hell. but I believe in us and I believe we can do this and I believe we're going to do it together. And, you know, we have the most female, the most diverse Congress to look forward to. And let's use that and bring ourselves together, create a more diverse community, a more diverse group, so that we can keep that moving. So for 2019, get your people and fortify yourself for the fights that are coming. And also a community to celebrate when things go right, like they did today. Varsha, I think that is it for us. I'm so happy that we got talking, and it feels so good to be back.
So much fun. It's like riding a bike, but like a really fun bike.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you, Hellions, for listening. We will be back here next week. So in the meantime, have a great weekend, raise some hell, and remember to practice some compassion. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.